So there's a verse up on the board, and let's see. Seems like there's two chapters here. This is the 10th canto, chapter 10, deliverance of the Yamala Arjun trees, and this is verse number 2 and 3, and 3 is on the board. So the series of verses begins with the last chapter. It says, text number 22, while Mother Yasoda was very busy with household affairs, the Supreme Lord Krishna observed twin trees known as Yamala Arjuna, which in former millennium had been demigod sons of Kuvera. In their former birth, these two sons, known as Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were extremely opulent and fortunate. But because of pride and false prestige, they did not care about anybody, and thus Narada Muni cursed them to become trees. Verse 1 of the next chapter. King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O great and powerful saint, what was the cause of Nalakuvaras and Manigrivas having been cursed by Narada Muni? What did they do that was so abominable that even Narada, the great sage, became angry at them? Kindly describe this to me. Sukadeva Goswami is asking this question. Why would Narada become so angry and curse him? Today's verse, Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, because the two sons of Kuvera have been elevated to the association of Lord Shiva, of which they were very much proud, they were allowed to wander in a garden attached to Kailash Hill on the bank of the Mandakini River. Taking advantage of this, they used to drink a kind of liquor called Varuni. Accompanied by women singing after them, they would wander in the garden of flowers, their eyes always rolling in intoxication. I think they're breaking the principles, don't you? I guess their japa is not very good. Okay. So, Prabhupada's purport. The verse mentions some of the material advantages afforded to persons associated with the devotees, with those devoted to Lord Shiva. Apart from Lord Shiva, if one is a devotee of any other demigod, one receives some material advantages. Foolish people therefore become devotees of demigods. This has been pointed out and criticized by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Kamaistastar Hita Gyanam Papadyante Nadevataha. Those who are not devotees of Krishna have a taste for women, wine, and so forth, and therefore they have been described as Hrita Gyan, bereft of sense. The Krishna conscious movement can very easily point out such persons, for they have been indicated in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Namam duskritina mudha prapandyante naradamaha maya parita jnana asuram bhavam asritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest of the mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Anyone who is not a devotee of Krishna and does not surrender to Krishna must be considered naradama, the lowest of men, and duskriti, one who always commits sinful activities. Thus there is no difficulty in finding out who is a third-class or fourth-class man, for such position can be understood simply by this crucial test. Is he or is he not a devotee of Krishna? Hare Bol. Hare Krishna. So either you're in or you're out. Why are devotees of the demigods greater in number than the Vaishnavas? The answer is given here. Vaishnavas are not interested in such fourth-class pleasures as women and wine, nor does Krishna allow them such facilities. Oh my God, four regulative principles. Ooh, come on, give me a break. Om Agyan Timidhandasya Gena Jana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Padanti Kam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So Srila Prabhupada started this Krishna consciousness movement in order to make first-class men. When he came to the United States of America, and that was his, what we say, objective, to find persons who are first-class, in other words, qualified to accept this bhakti yoga process. In other words, men who were intelligent, men who had some piety. But Prabhupada laments, or of course he points out, that I couldn't find any first class, nor Krishna didn't send me any first class, nor did he send me any second class, mostly all third and fourth class at best. But what to do? So he had to work with that. And Prabhupada was able to mold persons who were, they would make Jagai and Madai look like, you know, saints. I mean, Prabhupada came amongst the hippies. And one of the principles of hippiedom is you don't bathe. That's a rule. Not allowed to take bath. And as long as hair, you don't cut your hair, you don't bathe. You just try to get as many different types of intoxicants as you can, and illicit sex is the regulated principle that you must follow. So this was what Prabhupada had to work with. I mean, really, if you look at it, it was like that. And we see when we hear about the life of Srila Prabhupada and how much he had to endure in such association when he was trying to make devotees. Stealing his typewriters and being chased by a drug-crazy hippie and so many other difficulties that Prabhupada had. And it was one time when Prabhupada was giving a class. He was giving a kirtan. And then one girl took off all her clothes and started dancing in kirtan. So this is what Prabhupada had to go through. Prabhupada's eyes got big. And Malati ran over there and somehow found some cloth for the lady. And so this was what Prabhupada had to deal with. But what was he dealing with? He was dealing with the instructions of his spiritual master. Go to the West and preach Krishna consciousness. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was the forerunner, or we might say the vanguard, the person who initiated the activities of spreading Krishna consciousness around the world. He had that strong desire, knowing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission was to reach each and every living entity with this message of Krishna consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the vision, and he understood that someday this will actually be a reality, where people from all walks of life will come together and sing and dance and glorify Gornitai. Jai Sachi Nandana, Jai Sachi Nandana, Jai Sachi Nandana. But it was actually Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati who put it into action. And therefore, one of his programs was to send devotees, his own disciples, to different places around the world to bring Krishna consciousness. He sent people to London. London was the first place, thinking it's the biggest and most important city in the world. And therefore, thinking if we could do it in London, then it'll spread from there. But although some success was given, but nothing really tangible manifested. And after some time, those who went to London came back, received an honorable reception, but at the same time, they met a few people. They met some very high-class people in London, people who were in government, lords and ladies, but they couldn't really establish anything. And Prabhupada sent them to Germany. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta sent them to Germany. And of course they made one or two devotees in Germany. And then Prabhupada had a German godbrother, actually. And they also went to Burma and other places like that, Myanmar now it's called. So, although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati made an attempt to spread Krishna consciousness, there was only one person that did it, and that was His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, his mission was successful. So we can look at the history, and we see how much Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati pushed this idea of Krishna consciousness worldwide. He knew it was difficult to preach to Westerners, because he knew that there was very little piety there. And if there was, people would very easily become misunderstood this philosophy, or couldn't understand it because of its depth. But still, he persevered. And there are many nice stories. Of course, the first meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati illustrates his deep understanding of personalities. When Srila Prabhupada, at that time Abhay Charan, came to see Bhaktisiddhanta on the request of his friend, Narendranath Mulak. At the first meeting, he was given the instruction, not only after a meeting, but not even after a word was said. The first thing that he said was, "You are a very intelligent young man. You take this message of Lord Chaitanya to the Western world." This was the introduction. It's interesting if you think about it. It's not interesting, it's quite phenomenal. The first time you meet somebody, they give you a life mission. The first words they say to you. And it wasn't like a flippant remark or something just off the top just to make friends or to say something. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was completely serious. Completely serious. So much so that when our Srila Prabhupada heard that, he was shocked and stunned and somewhat speechless at first, but then after thinking about it, he responded according to his understanding that, you know, well, this is India and we are a dependent nation. Who will listen to our message? Well, first we need Swaraj. We need to be free from the British rule. Then when we have some status, then it'll be important to spread Lord Chaitanya's movement outside. But Bhaktisiddhanta immediately said, this political arrangement, that political arrangement, this is transcendental. This has nothing to do with any arrangements made by any governments. This is the need of the time. This message cannot wait. And so, as Srila Prabhupada describes in that discourse with his spiritual master, he said, "I was defeated. I couldn't say anything. I understood that here was a very great saintly person. And what he was saying was that he was actually a true representative of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu." So on that first meeting, something very powerful happened. So much so that that went deep into the heart of our Srila Prabhupada, and he never forgot that. Although it took him, what we might say, many years to actually execute that mission or that instruction, still that seed was planted so deeply by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that Prabhupada could only think about how to do it throughout his life. And of course, it took him many years. But we might say he was thinking that, well, let me do it here in India. If I can establish something here in India, then I can go to the West from there. But everything he tried to do in India seemed to get a little bit of a start and then just filter out. It never really manifested. And then finally Prabhupada understood, I have to understand the instruction as it is. Go to the West. Last night, I was watching for the first time that film that was produced here by the devotees on the life of Srila Prabhupada. It was a drama, not actually not a film, a drama. and it was displayed in one of the local theaters here. The Pandavasena group did the drama, which was heralded by everyone as one of the best, what we say, portrayals of the life of Srila Prabhupada. It was so nicely done. And as I was watching that, I was understanding, and the point kept came and coming up, that although Srila Prabhupada was having so many, many obstacles and so many reverses and so many disappointments and everything, his family fell apart, his business fell apart, when he tried to preach it didn't work, he lost all his money, everything went wrong. He kept saying, it was the instructions of my spiritual master, therefore it'll be successful. He had that fixed vrata that this will be successful if I just continue to persevere. And if we look at the situation, no ordinary person or even someone who was highly qualified would have persevered through so many reverses in life. Heart attacks, discouragements from people around him. Oh, you're too old, you can't go. It's too cold there, what will you eat? People are so steeped in ignorance, they'll never understand what you're saying. And then whatever support he was promised never came through. Amazing when you think about it. How much he, just that one thing, that my spiritual master has given me this instruction, and therefore that is my life and soul. Success or failure. And Srila Prabhupada makes a nice point in reference to the Shastras, with regard to this point. There's a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse number 41. Vyasapnaga budhir ekeha kudanandana bahusakya yanatas chambudayo vyavasahinam. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a commentary on this verse. And the verse says that one who is resolute in purpose, another one who is fixed, their aim is one. Those whose mind are diverted to different various types of goals in life, they cannot remain fixed. And therefore they are called irresolute or unfixed. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, says something interesting, in which Srila Prabhupada quotes as his success. You can give class tomorrow, not today. Today is my turn. Aribo ecstasy. Thank God for mothers. He's a nice boy, really nice boy. And so he says that whether it's easy or difficult is not the consideration. This has nothing to do with whether one tries for it or not. Because it's the instruction, that's the only thing that counts. Easy and difficult, there are no considerations. It may be easy, it may be difficult, that doesn't matter. But because it's the instructions, one remains fixed, and therefore success is guaranteed. Because we know a personality like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Who was this personality named Srila Bhakti Siddhanta? Quite an extraordinary personality. In the sense that his life was a, what we say, a result of a prayer by his father, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, praying for someone to come and reestablish Lord Chaitanya's mission amongst so much, what we say, what's the word, confusion, deviations, sahajiism, manipulation of the philosophy. There was so much of that going on at the time. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur and a few others were practically fighting against this. There were so many apra sampradayas, people who were claiming to be family members of Lord Chaitanya, family members of Lord Nityananda, and then making their own, what we say, understanding of the philosophy, and saying that they are the inheritance of this movement. And so, and of course, they weren't. Prabhupada makes this point, and the Acharyas also make this point. One doesn't inherit, you know, Krishna consciousness just because one is a family member. We see, Advaita Acharya, he had 6 sons, and only one, no, actually 3, but 2 outstanding were actually followers. The other 4 deviated. Srila Prabhupada, we see he had 5 children. How many actually followed him? So it doesn't mean you, just because you're born into the family, you have inheritance to what is happening with your parents in terms of, you know, being a acharya or being qualified to preach. One has to qualify according to what we say, shastra. So, and so Bhakti Vinod Thakura was fighting, and then he just, one day he prayed, "My dear Lord, send someone from your personal entourage to come and preach this message." And little beknownst to himself, it wound up being his own son, Bimala Prasad. He was the 5th son of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And that personality was born in Jagannath Puri to his wife, of course. What was her name? Bhagavati Devi. And only after recognizing a few incidents that happened in the life of the little baby at the time did Bhakti Vinod Thakur recognize that this was the actual answer to his prayer. His mother took him on the Rath Yatra cart that goes through the streets of Jagannath Puri, and she put him at the feet of Lord Jagannath to get the mercy of the Lord. As soon as that he was placed there, the garland of Lord Jagannath fell from Lord Jagannath and circled the little child. When Bhakti Vinod Thakur was informed by his wife what had happened, he understood this was the answer to his prayer. He was born also, and there was an indication that he was born. The umbilical cord that connects the mother with the child was wrapped around his body like a Brahmin thread. So this was another indication. And he was a very, what we say, well-behaved child, even in growing up. Very obedient, and very much following his father's guidance in teaching him the life of becoming a devotee. When he was 4 years old, he saw some mangoes, and he ate a mango. The mango was not offered. It was meant to be offered to the deity, the home deity of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. When his father realized what the little boy had done, he mildly chastised him. "Oh, you have taken the offering to the Lord. This is not good." It wasn't a strong chastisement. It was just a mild chastisement. But the little boy, only 4 years old, at that time resolved that I will never eat mangoes again in my life. Now, that's India, where mango season, you know, mango season is like one of the most important seasons of the year in India, and the mangoes come and people are in the markets getting the mangoes. And many times, unbeknownst to those persons, they offered him a mango, and he would say, "I am a fender, I cannot take." So throughout his whole life he followed that. He never ate a mango. And that was, and you know, what wrong does a little child do at 4 years old? It was an offense, but still he considered it. So this was another indication of the quality of his spiritual acumen. He was really, you know, from the time of his birth, he was fixed in devotional service to the Lord. Very special personality. And Prabhupada would say, "My spiritual master was a Vaikuntha man." Means that he came directly from the spiritual world to do this work. He didn't come under the guise of karma, as the ordinary living entities are born, karma, daiva, nitrena. We are born because of our past activities in the material world, and we take up our births accordingly. But there are occasions, by the Lord's arrangement, in order to bring religious principles to the world, he sends one of his special personalities. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was one such personality. The book that was heralded as his biography was called The Ray of Vishnu. A nice description of his character. He was actually coming from the Lord himself to do this work. And Srila Prabhupada, in describing his spiritual master, said many, many interesting things. He said he was a walking encyclopedia. He had the quality that whatever he read, he remembered. Shrutidhar. He never forgot anything. And he would sit in the library when he was in college and he would read all the books. He wasn't interested in going to the classes. He'd just go to the library and read and read and read and read all the books. And he never forgot anything he ever read, whether it was mundane or, what we say, spiritual. He had that, what we say, ability. So Prabhupada said he was a walking encyclopedia. And when he would preach, even Prabhupada, who was quite intelligent, would describe, I would listen, and I couldn't understand what he was saying. But still I would listen, because it was very, very interesting. He would speak in such high, affluent languages, both in Bengali and in English. He would speak in both. And Prabhupada would say, I couldn't understand, but he was very interesting. And later on, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was approached by one of his disciples to recommend Srila Prabhupada for initiation, even before the man finished the initiation recommendation, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, yes, I have noted him. He likes to hear. He likes to hear. And Prabhupada said, that was my qualification. I just would love to hear and listen to my spiritual master. There was that one incident when they were on parikram throughout the area of Vrindavan. This was towards the end of the parikram. It was lasting for almost a month. And the last day, they were there in one area of Vrindavan. And that evening, there was buses going to Seshasayi Vishnu Temple. So the announcement came that anyone wants to go to Seshasayi Vishnu Temple should meet at 7 o'clock to go on the buses. But Guru Maharaj will be speaking tonight in the tent also at 7 o'clock. So Prabhupada describes this and said, mostly everyone went to the Seshasayi Vishnu. But I was thinking, what is this Seshasayi? I just want to hear from my spiritual master. And so he came. And he said there was a few of us, not many, three or four of us that came and stayed, listened to Bhaktisiddhanta. Everyone else wanted to see the deity, which is a very wonderful deity, very unusual deity. But Prabhupada said, I just love to hear. He said, that was my qualification. I just love to hear. And this is, Prabhupada makes this point, that this is the foundation for making spiritual advancement and for understanding knowledge, the desire to hear, which when it's done with attention and understanding, then awakens within that person the nature of that knowledge. Jai Sisi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. And so this qualification was extraordinary in our Srila Prabhupada, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati noted that. He likes to hear. So we should note this point because it's very important in our own spiritual life. Reading is hearing, hearing is hearing. And to absorb oneself in the process of devotional service by understanding how to practice it carefully and successfully, and at the same time hearing about the philosophy and the leelas of Krishna in Vrindavan. All these things are the process of hearing, which brings about realizations. So, therefore, this is our success. Sometimes we joke and we say, God has given you one tongue and two ears. It's not a joke, actually. It's just a little, what we say, innuendo to let us know that hearing is more important than speaking. Of course, speaking has to be there, or else there is no hearing. But we learn so much from the process of hearing. And especially when we hear from the Shastras or from the pure devotees, then that knowledge goes directly to the heart, and then it awakens what we say, detachment from material life. Through constant hearing, one loses attraction for this material world. Be careful, it's dangerous. But it's good, that's the kind of danger we want to get into. So this hearing process goes on. So one who hears can also speak. One who hears can also speak. And Prabhupada said, I would just love to hear, even though I didn't understand it. If you listen to some of the writings which are transcribed into from the lectures of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, it takes you, just like for instance, the Brahma Samhita prayers and the purports given by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Jiva Goswami did a commentary on that. Bhakti Vinod Thakur took Jiva Goswami's commentary and changed it into Bengali. And then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati presented it as a text. And when we got it in this ISKCON society, this Brahma Samhita, we were trying to understand, what is he saying? The English was so elevated and so hard to understand that you had to have a dictionary next to you for every word, practically. So the devotees in ISKCON actually approached Srila Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, please write a explanation of what your spiritual master has written in Brahma Samhita. Prabhupada said, you just read it over and over and over again. And if you keep reading it over and over and over again, you will gradually understand it more and more. So he gave the formula that when something is not understandable, just apply repetition to that. And by the, what we say, super soul within the heart, and your concentration on trying to understand, gradually the knowledge starts to become revealed more and more like that. So Bhakti Prabhupada didn't want to try to outdo his spiritual master or take what he had doing, and he said, you just read it over and over and over again like that. But even reading it over and over and over again means reading it over and over and over more. It's just so deep. Well, Bhaktisiddhanta with Saraswati was like that. In one discussion, when what professor from the United States of America, Professor Carruthers, who was a Christian, and he came to India, and he heard about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he wanted to meet him. And then when he met him, he started posing questions to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati on various religious topics. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati answered those questions in the most highfalutin language that the professor couldn't understand. Why? Because he wanted to make the point that this knowledge, which this professor was just thinking was subordinate to Christianity, is actually very deep and hard to understand. So he presented in a very erudite way just to give the sophistication and the value of this knowledge, where this professor was so astonished by hearing what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote that he actually wrote articles about what he had heard, trying to understand more and more. And then, of course, he was impressed. very much impressed. And that gave him a greater understanding of the quality of this Vaishnava philosophy and culture. It's not something small. It's not something, you know, just somebody put together. It's actually quite very deep and can be explained from different angles of vision. Like that. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati used that language in different ways to make different points. There are many, many wonderful stories about his life. And of course, many of the books that he had written and many of the lectures that he had spoken later became books where devotees now in our movement are reading. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was deep. And Prabhupada encouraged us to read Bhakti Vinod Thakur's writings, especially Jiva Dharma and what's the other one? Shikshamrita, yeah. And Chaitanya Shikshamrita. These two things he actually asked his devotees to bring it into English translation so we could have it available. Bhakti Vinod Thakur was very much westernized in his presentation. He was speaking to Western audiences. He mixed it in. But Prabhupada cautioned us, didn't restrict us, but in some sense he did, that you can't, it's very difficult to understand my spiritual master. If you want to understand Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, you must get it from me. You must get it from me. But still, we try to understand it in relationship to what Srila Prabhupada has given us, and not different from that. So, there's much to be said about his life. He penned one book called Brahmins and Vaishnavas, which was given as a speech during a debate between the Vaishnavas and the Brahmanas. This was in Midnapore in September 1911 in Midnapore, where Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati came on behalf of his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who was unable to come because of rheumatic fever, to debate with these Brahmins who were saying, if you're born in a Brahmin family, that is the best. That is the highest birth, and therefore one is qualified to study the Shastras and to teach the Shastras. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati before then had written this explanation that Brahmins are glorious. To take a Brahmin birth is considered to be a good advantage for understanding and for worshiping the Lord. But unless one actually takes that position and actually follows the principles and develops the qualities of a Brahmin in relationship to service to the Lord, and otherwise unless one becomes a Vaishnava, and then even a Sudra, who's born in a low-class family, if they become qualified and take up devotional service, they're better than the Brahmins. And it's a nice explanation, or what we say, a description of what happened. The Brahmins were there. This new young boy, Bhakti Siddhanta, he wasn't very old at the time. He was in his 30s. He had come. These were many senior Brahmins from the area. And he was the first one to speak. And what he did was, he did something interesting. He glorified Brahminical culture and birth in a Brahmin family, quoting Shastras, verse after verse. The Brahmins were astonished. They couldn't believe what they were hearing. They were thinking, he's come to debate us, or is he one of us? He's on our side. And they all got really excited about what he was saying, and felt proud and victorious. But then at one point, Bhakti Siddhanta switched the whole theme and said, but even if one is born in a Brahmin family and he's not engaged in devotional service, he's no better than... He's not qualified. In other words, he started to say that anyone who is born in any family, if he's a Vaishnava, he's better even than a Brahmin who's not born, who's not following. And so he spoke so powerfully, and there was a lot of people there who came for the debate. They were just onlookers, spectators. That after he concluded, everyone got so excited that they all got up and started rushing towards him to touch his feet. It became quite a difficult situation. All these people are now running up to him to grab his feet. They were really overwhelmed by what they had heard. The police were there. They stopped the crowds, and they took Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in the back and bathed his feet with buckets of water and threw all the water on the people. And that way everyone was satisfied. They got the mercy in that way. And so, yeah, this was a very... And there's a book that's called Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Perhaps you've seen it. And it was actually the notes that he used for this debate that later came in the form of this book. It's a very interesting book. And so this was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was out to... And Srila Prabhupada made this point that... His mission was to destroy impersonalism. What is that verse from the poem that Srila Prabhupada wrote on the Vyasa Puja of Bhaktisiddhanta in 1936? Absolute is sentient. The Supreme Lord is a person. Absolute is sentient. Thou hast proved, you have shown that. Impersonal calamity, those who say otherwise, it's calamitous. You have removed that by your preaching. And when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, oh, he has understood my mission. He has understood. He was so happy. And later, of course, it was printed in one of the magazines, that newspaper they were printing at the time? The Harmonist. One of Gurudas, Srila Prabhupada's disciple, found that copy and showed it to Srila Prabhupada, and he remembered the poem, and Prabhupada became so happy, and then he started speaking about how much his spiritual master appreciated that statement. And he said that this, he has understood my mission. The idea that God, the absolute truth, is impersonal, and Prabhupada would say is the greatest, offense against the Supreme Personality of God. It has created so much calamity in the world that if God is not a person, then there's... You know, I don't have to serve him. I don't have to surrender to him. I can approach the absolute truth, which is impersonal, in order to become the absolute truth or to free myself from material suffering. In other words, people take up the spiritual practice in order to gain something material. But when you understand God as a person, you must follow him. You must follow him. Therefore, because he's the Supreme Person, whatever he says becomes the standard to live by. Therefore, ruling out his personality means to commit a great offense and to reject the purpose of life, which is devotional service to the Lord. And so that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was strong. And Srila Prabhupada was also strong on that. You see, when Prabhupada was in America, no, he wasn't in America. This was in 1970 when some of the Prabhupada's new disciples had come up with the idea that Prabhupada was God. He's actually an incarnation of Vishnu, but he's not telling us that, but we know it. And then they started to preach. It was a group of three or four devotees who were senior. and was preaching like that, and they were trying to get others to understand Prabhupada's position according to them. And this created a division within the movement. Some were agreeing, some were not agreeing, and then there was meetings, and there was actually quite difficult situation. And there was actually fighting and arguing and so many things. Finally, the word got back to Srila Prabhupada, who was in Japan at the time. And then, of course, he told, you know, he said, "Take these four persons should now be removed from our society. They can't stay. They have to go out and preach on their own. They cannot associate with any of us." And then Prabhupada also did another thing. He put his second pranam mantra. Before, it was only the first part. Then he put Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prachari Nirvishesha Shunyavani Pastyatyare Satari. That he is a disciple of Saraswati Deve, and he's come to the Western world to teach the message of Lord Chaitanya and to destroy impersonalism and voidism. So Prabhupada said there's only one thing worse than underestimating the spiritual master. That is overestimating the spiritual master. Why? Because then when you become spiritual master, you become God. So if you think your spiritual master is God, then you become spiritual master and then you're God, right? That's the understanding. So Prabhupada realized that this poison was entering into our society, and therefore he cut it off completely at that time. And so many times, so many deviations came into our society. Even today, there's still. But some strong ones really came in. Also in the beginning years, there were people who were saying that, yeah, the highest thing is to become gopis or residents of Vrindavan, and therefore we understand that actually we should practice this gopi bhava. And they formed a club called the Gopi Bhava Club, where devotees were dressing up as gopis, men were dressing up with saris, devotees were dressing up with peacocks, cowherd boys, and having meetings and discussing Krishna's leelas. This was in ISKCON, Haribo. And the word got back to Prabhupada. He didn't know about it, and they were having regular meetings. It was going on for months. And finally Prabhupada said, "Stop it. Just tell this thing, this is bogus. This is pretense. This is sahajism. And our process is Gopi Bhattir Padakamalayar Dasa Dasa Anudas, servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Not to elevate oneself artificially to a position and then act in that position." So Prabhupada was very strong on that. So you can see the history of spirituality throughout the world is full of deviations and diversions. And therefore, great acharyas such as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and our Srila Prabhupada were preaching very enthusiastically, constantly, to help us completely understand. And Prabhupada said one thing. He said it many times, and it's interesting. It seems like a small statement, but it's powerful. He said, "If you understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you are advanced in spiritual life." If you have that understanding. That if you believe the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Sri Krishna, then you are advanced. And he also challenged us. Do you actually believe Krishna is God? And sometimes we would respond in different ways to somewhere give an understanding of what it means to understand. And Prabhupada said, no. He would reject whatever we said. "Prabhupada, because you said it, we believe it." "No." Because Krishna said it, we believe it. Yes. In other words, Prabhupada was always testing us to just to see what was the level of our understanding of what he gave us. Do we actually believe that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God? And he's a little boy, steals butter, teases girls, he has a lot of friends, and he plays. He looks like an ordinary kid who's just mischievous, right? Can we understand that that's the Supreme Lord, the cause of all causes? That understanding comes through one's bhakti, through one's execution of devotional. As we purify our heart through the process of chanting the holy names and executing the process, Krishna reveals himself as he is. And then it becomes clear, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his activities in Vrindavan are the highest manifestation of his nature. That's Krishna. So Prabhupada would challenge us like that sometimes. And there's many, many nice stories with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. So many wonderful stories. How he invested within Srila Prabhupada a desire to go to the West and preach Krishna consciousness. How he wanted book distribution to be the focus of our preaching Krishna consciousness in the West. Like that. And Prabhupada followed that strongly. So we cannot separate these two personalities. They're one. They're two, but they're one in everything they do. Like that. I was listening to Prabhupada the other day, yesterday, and Prabhupada's giving a lecture in Mayapur. And it's just around the time of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. So Prabhupada's glorifying Lord Chaitanya. And he's also glorifying Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then he refers to Bhakti Siddhanta's statement. He said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said that the whole world will one day learn Bengali just to read Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Prabhupada said, therefore I presented Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Bengali as my spiritual master gave it. I didn't change it into the Sanskrit. He said, of course, there are many Sanskrit verses in the work, but I kept the Bengali because my spiritual master said, someday everyone will learn Bengali to read Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we still have a little ways to go on that one. But this was Prabhupada's statement. He was very much enthusiastic to glorify his spiritual master, who was glorifying the Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's narration of the pastimes and life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is a great tradition that we have found ourselves in. We're greatly fortunate to be, what we say, connected to Krishna through these great personalities such as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, and Bhakti Vinod Thakur. The wealth of knowledge that they give us and the clear understanding of the process of bhakti is so wonderful. And it's so, what we say, pleasing. Simply chant Hare Krishna. Just chant the holy names, that's all. Become attached to chanting. Become attached to chanting and take some time and read these books and understand deeper our relationship with Krishna and the process of bhakti. That's the essence of the philosophy. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati presented that essence in a statement that he printed in one of his magazines, where he said that the holy name, chanting the holy name, must be accompanied by hearing the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. He said, just like there is Radha and there is Krishna. And so we need both. the internal energy, the pleasure potency, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna Katha and Harinam Sankirtan, both. So for chanting the holy names, and we're not taking time to read and hear about Krishna in these books, we won't develop a strong, faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. Although we're chanting, still hearing about Krishna's pastimes, reading about them, reciting these pastimes, helps one become fully attached to Krishna. Because these pastimes are all attractive, and they connect us in such a wonderful way to Krishna. And they give great pleasure to the heart and mind like that. So we need both Krishna Katha and Harinam like that. As bhakti, there's one verse, Harikatha, Harikirtan. And then the third one is added, Hari Puja, to worship the Lord also. That's the process. So the more we do it, the more we become fixed in our Krishna consciousness. Any questions? Comments?